So I've been really fortunate to be a part of this bridge from then till now. So I've talked to all these dudes about the past and what's going on right now. Of course, the game is absolutely the same and entirely different. I was looking at the work briefly. A lot of their starters being right-handed. They got a pretty good lefty in the bullpen. But to win this series, score first and win innings, you need to get on top and not have to face their better guys at the end of the ballgame. Otherwise, you're going to be in trouble. You know, you see all those names on our scoreboard once in a while that go back to the early 1900s with all this great war and all this kind of stuff. And maybe like 50, 60 years from now, you're going to see Johnny up there with the same kind of reverence. So I know he's ready. I know he's in the moment. He's throwing the ball really well right now. So, again, I'm eager to watch him pitch. The challenge is just that you have to be on top of your game. Brad's right next to him. Brad's outstanding also. I got Davey. He's got Brad. And the rest of it is I had Mickey Callaway. Mickey and I worked together in California. Also, I know Mickey. So many connections there with the coaching staff. It's all of that. You look in the dugout, you know. They know what you're thinking and vice versa. And that's why at the end of the day, it's not about me or Tito or anybody. It's about players. This game is always about players. And if your guys play better than their guys, you win. That's what it really comes down to.
Bloomberg's going to start game one. Bauer and Tomlin will be games two and three. We're going to hold off as long as we can with Trevor just to get the most information we can. If it works out right, we'd like him to pitch second. If the doctors or the trainers deem that those next 2 days would really give him a better chance, then we could move him back. So we'll see.
Danny is going to be on, and Cody Anderson will be taken off. Nothing's official. So if we have another drone incident or anything with model airplanes or anything, Danny threw last night, and he threw 3 innings, and under those circumstances, it's not the easiest to probably reach your best velocity, but he was getting after pretty good. We've talked about using 3 starters, then after the 3rd game, we would kind of see where we are.
We're feeling good. We're getting progressing the way we had hoped. Right now, we're just getting down the swelling, getting range of motion back, and if we can get it to where I can move around, doctor's got stuff that can take pain away, so I'll be all right tomorrow night.
We know who we're playing. I think we know he's going to be a good team. You're playing the best of the best at this point. Excited city, excited group of guys. We got some friends over there that happy to see them do well, but ultimately it's about us being able to prepare and get ready for the team we know we're playing now.
First of all, I don't know how big of an underdog we are. They'll probably be favored. They've been, I think they've won the most games in baseball this year, and if people want to count us out, I think we've had guys that maybe that's fueled them. I think whatever works for us, whatever works for each individual, I think is best. Some people like being the underdog, and that's driving them.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza. It is championship day right here. Yeah! Championship day in the state of Ohio. I know it's not right next door to you. I know it's not coming emanating from the glass bowl or anything like that, but our friends to the east in Cleveland, Ohio are going to celebrate today, and those who are Cleveland sports fans who live here in Northwest Ohio, or even anybody who might be transplanted up there in Southeast Michigan or at any point in between, anybody who can hear the sound of my voice has to be excited about what's going on down there today. It is unlike many things that many cities have ever had. I don't know. I don't even know. Jim, this is one of those Elias questions that I don't think even Elias would do, and that is to track whether or not any city has ever raised the banner for a championship on the same day as the start of another sport in their city's championship series. That's what's going on tonight. The Cavaliers get their rings and their banner and the rafters out at Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland tonight. And about that's at 7 o'clock, and about an hour after that, the first pitch will be thrown across the plaza, their Gateway Plaza in Cleveland, at Progressive Field for the World Series. And in honor of what we are going to kind of watch very closely and you're going to listen to right here, because the only place in all of Toledo radio that you can hear the World Series tonight and every night will be right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, your exclusive Toledo home for the World Series. So if you're not around a TV and you want to experience it radio style, you're going to hear it right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We're going to watch it closely, and we are going to spend a lot of time talking about that today. And with that, I give you this.
Andrew Miller, a little bit like facing Randy Johnson.
Miller to the plate, and he struck him out. 4-0 with an ERA of 1.5 in his 26 games with the Indians. Steele, 3 call, 1 down. The 0-2. He strikes out Benintendi for out number 2. And he strikes out Russell Martin to open the 7th.
And the last 6 outs he's recorded the last 2 days have via the strikeout.
Two balls, two strikes, one out. Two up, two down, into the seventh.
When you watch Miller pitch, as a former player, you say to yourself, was I really a pitcher?
Struck out the side. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. One down. Four straight strikeouts for the lefty. Back to the slider again.
Sight that almost stops your heart. You take a swing and he throws one from the mound, but you don't make it. You start to freeze and from behind you're startled by a shout. Strike three, you're out. 'Cause now it's Miller time, and no one's gonna save you when he throws another strike. You know it's just a single run. But we believe, land, and Miller's stepping in to get it done. Don't blink your eyes, or he will shut you down, no hesitation. Here comes the pitch, and Miller's slide is sure to blow your mind. Kick your behind, 'cause now it's Miller.
Wow, now that is what I'm talking about, championship style. And Jim Cushlin, how about the fact that the American League Championship MVP is the guy that everybody is focusing on, and there's no guarantee he's even going to play?
Right.
I mean, seriously, nobody's talking about John Lester, the starter for the Cubs. Nobody's talking about Corey Kluber, the starter for the Indians in Game 1 tonight. Everybody's talking about what are they going to do if the Indians can hand a lead to Andrew Miller. I think you just got a bit of a taste of it with that nice string of Miller strikeouts from the postseason that you assembled there. That's where everybody is kind of focusing on right now, that if the Indians are to shut down that potent, very, very explosive Chicago Cubs lineup, if they're able to do that, they're going to have to get just a few solid innings from their starters and then just hand it to this guy. Talk about pressure. All you're expected to be, Andrew, is perfect. No pressure there. You give up a base knock and a walk and somebody drives in a run on you and the aura of invincibility is lifted. And now people are focusing on the other former New York Yankee reliever in this series who was traded just at about the same time to the Cubs that Andrew Miller was traded to the Indians, Aroldis Chapman. So no pressure. All you're expected to be is perfect.
Yeah, and of course, and even Joe Maddon kind of mentioned it there in part of the montage. It's like, you know, one of the keys more or less is we got to be able to score something early so we don't have to have Tito bring out Miller, because that's going to, obviously, as we know, Bob, going to continue to be the game plan. Indians get a lead somewhere nowhere in the middle innings unless Kluber is just, you know, mowing people down. But right. any other starter, this is in play for. You have a lead in the middle innings, and you're the Indians, and it'll be Miller time. And by the way, one other thing you mentioned, because you started before you played all that, mentioning the Cavs and the ring and how we're actually here at this day. That's so crazy if you're a fan of teams from that city. Kudos to the Cavs and the NBA TV guys for agreeing to move everything up a half hour. Originally, the ring ceremony and banner was going to be about 7:30 with the tip off at 8. They moved everything back by about a half hour just so people from Cleveland specifically could watch that, then flip over to game one. A good call on all of them for doing that.
And you know what's even cooler? I'm going to go ahead and assume that at 7 o'clock, when that ring ceremony happens and that championship banner is raised, it is going to be on the giant, massive scoreboard there inside Progressive Field so that everybody who's gathered there for Game 1 of the World Series will be able to watch what's happening right across the plaza inside Quicken Loans Arena. And you'll have not only 20,000 screaming lunatics inside the arena, you're going to have another 35,000 because they have fewer seats now, if you remember,
yep.
Since they revamped Progressive Field. But about 35,000 screaming nut jobs right next door watching it on the giant screen as they get ready for and what better mojo, too.
Sure. You
know, for the city, for the fans there, who, of course, fans of both the Cavaliers and Indians, which would be, I don't know, everybody, to watch the celebration, chances are, whatever they show on the scoreboard inside the queue, you know, that massive, center court thing that they have there, I don't even know what you call that giant four-way screen, but everything they show there, which will probably be highlights of the championship that the Cavaliers won against Golden State, will probably be simulcast over to the baseball stadium, and they're inside the park. You'll have them watching that. Everybody will be screaming and cheering. When that banner is raised, they'll go nuts, and it's just going to create a vibe, an atmosphere of, I don't want to say inevitability, like, yes, this is going to happen. This is happening right now. It's happening to us. It's happening to our teams. But I feel like that's going to be the feeling some people have, and I think it could be one of the more interesting home field advantages that anybody has ever had in the history of the World Series. No disrespect to the Cubs in any way, and they're not trying to do this to mess with them, but it's the right thing to do. Let that entire city celebrate one championship while game one of the next championship is underway, or is about to start anyway, and get everybody jacked up and juiced like that. I mean, seriously, it's the kind of thing that really is going to create an atmosphere that should favor the home team.
No, it absolutely should. And really, as you're saying that, the only way I could think of for the Cubs to bottle that back up is just what we said a moment ago related to Andrew Miller. If they could get some kind of early lead, because if it's Indians lead or tied getting into the middle innings, that zoo's not going to stop tonight.
Oh, God, no. Oh, God, no. And, you know, and I'm sure they'll be giving updates, from the queue over there during the game, during the baseball game, and vice versa. And every time something good happens on one venue, it's going to explode in the other one. And it's just, like I said, it's going to be a really, I mean, any home stadium, you saw how loud Toronto was.
Sure.
When the Indians went up there. I mean, you know, great fans up there north of the border, and they fill the Rogers Center with some crazy people who make tons of noise. It's supposed to be that way, quite obviously, when you're hosting a playoff series or a championship game, whatever the case might be. So it was going to be crazy anyway, but it's just, I think it's another level of crazy. If there's something beyond crazy, if there's a word that means crazy on steroids or insane on steroids or loud on steroids, that's what they're gonna project there, and I just think it's gonna be a real big advantage and something the Cubs are gonna have to overcome probably early, maybe by getting the first run.
Yeah.
Get to Corey Kluber and get one on the board, and maybe you kind of neutralize a little bit of the emotion, the mental, no, that's not the word I'm looking for. What's the word I'm looking for? Not the actual physical accomplishment, but the emotional lift, I guess, that they're getting from that. I can't find the word, so I'll just have to leave it at that. So anyway, that's what's going on out there. I really don't know. I was listening to Mike and Mike this morning right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, and they were talking about this as well. And it's just to have a championship being raised, a banner being raised on the same night as an opening game of a World Series or another sport, I don't know that it's ever been done. They were pondering that, and I don't know that it's ever been done. If the Indians are able to finish it off and actually win the World Series, then you got another thing to look at here, and that is which cities have boasted two championship teams in one city, in two different sports in the same year. That is a very, very short list. I think we all know that. I remember back when I was a kid in 1979, and I'll never forget it, because you grow up in Cleveland, Ohio, and you see, you know, Pittsburgh sports on the cover of your Sports Illustrated. No internet. That's all you have is once a month you waited for, or once a week, I mean, you waited for that thing to arrive. I'll never forget 1979. I was, 12 years old, and here comes Sports Illustrated with the words City of Champions on the front cover and a picture of Willie Stargell, Pops, from the We Are Family World Championship Pirates, and Terry Bradshaw, the quarterback of the world champion Pittsburgh Steelers. You got two of them standing there in its City of Champions, and I was like, yeah. Whoa. First of all, I was jealous because we're in Cleveland and they're there. But second of all, I was like, oh, my God, they have two championships at one time. Now, mind you, that was 1979.
By the way, Bob, real quick, fun fact with the Cubs being the Indians' opponent in this World Series, yeah. It's actually the Pittsburgh Pirates who now have one of the longest droughts. I'm not counting teams that haven't won any amongst teams that have won some, right. At least a pennant at some point. Pirates have one of the biggest droughts now.
Of going to the World Series?
Of going to the World Series. That 79 team was their last trip.
I'd have to look. I mean, I know you said you're not counting the ones who have never won it. That would be the Astros and
The Nationals Expos franchise.
No, because they're too young.
Right. No, and Nationals Expos was 62. And
no, but it was the Astros, which was like 55, and I think that when they were formed, and they've never won one. And then the Rangers, I think, too. I think the Rangers were the other two Texas teams, if I'm not mistaken. They were both like close to one another.
No, the only two teams right now that have never actually won a pennant is
I'm talking about winning a World Championship.
Oh, you're okay. Because I was just referring to winning
just getting there. Right.
Because I was just talking about referring to just the pennant. And the Pirates now have one of the longest droughts out of the Cubs aren't on the top of that list.
Let's come back to that because you interrupted my thought on just the dual championships in one city. That 1979 thing was the last one that I can remember. And I got to believe. In fact, I'm trying to remember the last time it happened in any city. That one jumps to mind because it's one of those memories from childhood where I have that image in my head of Stargell and Bradshaw holding a trophy and holding their respective trophies. In fact, they might have been holding the others. It might have been Bradshaw holding the World Series Championship trophy and Stargell holding the Lombardi trophy. But anyway, it was City of Champions. And my father loved that because my father was a native Pittsburgher. My father and mother were both born in Western Pennsylvania, so they were Steelers and Pirates fans. But me as growing up in Cleveland, of course, you know, a little bit different. But that was one of the times I remember City of Champions, and I have to think back now, when is the last time that one city won two? For some reason, I want to say San Francisco Bay Area.
Nope. I got it right here. You were just talking about it.
Hold on. Let me ponder it for a moment or two here. I'm trying to think of recent teams.
It is it's recent.
It's very recent?
Pretty recent.
Okay. Well, then I've got to go back here and I'll ponder this.
You were just talking about them.
We were just talking about.
You just brought up the city a few moments ago.
Toronto? No, not Toronto, obviously. They don't have football.
Steelers Penguins in 09.
Oh, so it was the same city.
Yep.
Okay, there you go. So they've done, and I neglect hockey sometimes because it's not my number one sport. So I forget about that sometimes. Okay. So that's the same city then. I'm trying to figure out which cities, plural, would the city of Cleveland join if the Indians finish this thing off and win 4 out of 7 against the Cubs. I think Mike and Mike this morning said they join a very select handful of cities to have two titles in their town at one time. And I didn't hear exactly how many. I missed that from this morning. So if we can figure that out, let's do that. Let's figure that out because that's what we're talking about here. Then we can go back to the historical nature of this particular series. As you point out, the 1908 thing and the 1948 thing, obviously, these are two teams that have just been starving and two cities that have been starving for it for a very, very long time. To win a pennant, obviously not as big of a deal for the Indians because they were there in 95 and again in 97. For the Cubs, it's the first time in 45 years they've won the flag to even get to the World Series. And I know that's where you were going with your immediate research there, Jim, talking about teams that have had the longest drought to even getting to the World Series. And you mentioned the Expos / Nationals franchise. Did you have any others on that?
The only other ones on that list would be Expos / Nationals. So that's 69 when they were expanded. That's technically the longest drought now, but they've never won one, so it's weird to use the word drought when you never won one. Right. Then it's the Mariners, who were an expansion team in 77, okay. Then the Pirates in 79. Those are the three longest pennant droughts right now.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Which, of course, you know, is something that sports fans will have look up, because we all knew the answer to that question for so long. It was the Cubs.
Right, exactly. And you know, the two were, of course, the Cubs and the Red Sox. The curse of Babe Ruth and everything else that was lifted, of course, in 2004. And then repeated, of course, by Terry Francona 3 years later. So, I mean, this is, you know, in his Red Sox. It was 1908 and 1918. Those two, you know, years were just, you know, jumped out at you. They were part of sports lore, part of our lexicon. Now that the Red Sox are no longer relevant in that category, it's always been about the Cubs. And next, the 68-year drought for the Indians, which makes this, of course, you know, the Hell Freezes Over tour of Major League Baseball. Now, here's an interesting thing. I played that Miller parody, Miller Time, which, by the way, is all kind of awesome, especially as we get closer to Halloween. I played that for you. I want to give you another little musical interlude here. Jim, you know that song that we often play, that you often play for us, during early in the baseball season, the Talkin' Tribe song?
Yes, yes.
Did you know that that is not unique to the Cleveland Indians?
Really?
No, not at all.
I just have fond memories of that being the Indian song as a kid. I'm still mad that they don't use it anymore.
In honor of the Major League Baseball World Series tonight between the Cleveland Indians and the Chicago Cubs, give this a listen.
With Tinker Evers and Frank Chance, Cub fans did a victory dance. Who was Harry Steinfeld anyway? Charlie was a showman, Gabby's homer in the gloaming. Pennant so pretty, the Windy City in those days. I'm talking baseball, Warnicke and Kyler Cubs, baseball. Hack Wilson and Wildfire, Augie Stan and Jurgis on the club. That year, Freddie Lindstrom was a sub. I'm talking baseball and the Cubs.
Doesn't that sound a little bit weird?
It does, yeah.
You didn't know this existed, did you?
Negative, I did not.
I found that out this morning. Keep listening.
Ernie's baseball days were full of fun. Williams began his streak, and Fergie was at his peak. Wrigley Field had many moments in the sun. I'm talking baseball. Glenn Beckett, Handy Cubs, baseball. Kessinger and Randy. Santo and the Vulture on the club. Handsome Ransom, DeFondi, Kenny Hubs. Talking baseball and the Cubs.
It just sounds so weird after hearing this melody and that voice.
Hassel's one hitter in the fall. Sandberg doing all that he could do. Come on, let's play two.
Wait for it.
I'm talking baseball. Baseball and the Cubs.
Cubs win.
Wait for
talking
it.
Talking baseball. Cubs win. Chicago baseball.
Actually pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. I never knew they did
it.
Here's the one I remember.
This is the one we always play.
The Gray Eagle soared to the peaks. Smith and Babby ended the streak. Things were great in 48 when Boudreaux had the reins. I'm talking baseball. Shoeless Joe.
So I just feel like, you know, because we're sitting here in Ohio, and everybody in Ohio, I presume, including in Cincinnati down in Reds country, and in here in Toledo, I assume everybody is going to be pulling for the home state Cleveland Indians to win.
Well, they'll be about the only ones, Bob.
Probably. There will probably be 49 other states rooting for the Cubbies to lift that curse, kill that billy goat, and everything else that happened over the course of the last century.
By the way, how interesting is that? Because I've been toying with that in my mind and trying to figure out what it means for the last couple of days. days when, you know, the morning after, so Sunday morning, it became apparent to me that, oh yeah, everybody but us are going to be rooting for the Cubs in this series. Yeah. Or spun another way, we're in the Yankees' role, Bob.
And
nobody wants the
way,
Indians
obviously.
To win in a different
everybody
way.
Everybody did that because they hated the Yankees.
Right.
In this case, nobody hates Cleveland. It's just that they love the story of the Cubs.
Right.
The lovable losers for all of these years finally getting an opportunity to end that drought. So that's why, obviously, and I know you knew that, but that's exactly the difference here. So 49 other states are going to be rooting for the Cubs. Only people here in the Buckeye State are going to be rooting for the Indians. And while we do so very vociferously on this show, because we're going to, you know, we're going to celebrate, you and I are both native Clevelanders, Jim Cushlin, while we do it vociferously, we also want to be fair and pay a little bit of respect to the National League champions who may end up being the world champions. So I wanted to give you baseball and the Cubs, something I found this morning that I didn't even know existed, and I wanted to share that. Hey, I also want to share with you the joy of being at the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore. Hundreds of new Nike Buckeye products are in stock. Everything with a Buckeye leaf, everything in scarlet and gray, quite frankly, anything in any color is on sale right now. 10% store-wide savings, no matter what you want, at the Buckeye Store and More. So new products are arriving daily, hundreds of them. You know, this is the hundreds of them, I mean to say. This is the largest store in Ohio dedicated to Buckeye gear. You're absolutely going to love it. But if you're a Wolverines fan or a Fighting Irish, Spartans, Rockets, Falcons, or Tigers fan, you're going to find great gear there, too, because this is the Buckeye Store and More, which means there are huge fan zones for all of those other teams inside as well. So get out to Sylvania. It's in Starlight Plaza at 5700 Monroe. You can't miss it. It's between Ralphie's and Dave's, and Brutus, big inflatable Brutus, is on the roof waving you in to the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore. Talking more Cubby baseball and Indian style with Bob Iback, former PR director of the Cubs, who's got something very, very special for a very good cause. We'll talk about that next as we continue right here on The Ticket.
We are ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling onward, it is 3:40. Phone calls are just flooding in right now with people offering all kinds of reminders of cities that have won two championships in 1 year. Or in one season, you know, because sometimes you cross over from the, you know, the season spans in the NFL, the season spans, of course, 2 years.
Especially so, basketball and hockey.
Exactly. And basketball and hockey, as well. So everything except baseball. Baseball's the only one, think about it, completed in 1 year.
That's true.
They all cross over. So in one season. So we got a lot of really good answers there. From way back in yesteryear, the 1927 New York Giants and Yankees, 28 Rangers and Yankees, all that stuff. 35 Detroit had a triple. How about that? How about a three-peat? Pistons, Tigers, and Red Wings all in the same year in 1935. But I was looking for more modern, just because, again, that's what we all recall the modern, you know, kind of call the modern era, whether you want to look at the Super Bowl era as being that or not. You don't want to if you're in Cleveland, because you do then get credit for 1948, the Browns and the Indians, because the Browns won the AAFC championship in that year. The Indians won the World Series. But more modern, 79, as we said, Pittsburgh Steelers and Pirates. 2009, Pittsburgh Steelers and Penguins. 2002, we had Angels and Lakers. That's out there in L.A., if we're going to call the Anaheim Angels the L.A. Angels there. And then what else did we have there, Jim Cushlin? '04, Boston, the Red Sox, and the Patriots.
And the Patriots.
Not called the Boston Patriots. They share
if one
the, same,
was, yeah, exactly.
The same market.
Right, right. So same principle. If you want to count the New Jersey Devils as part of New York, and some would,
I know a hard time with that. But
Devils and Yankees in 2000.
I mean, because when you have eight teams in your market,
right?
Then that's crazy because they got two football, two basketball with the Brooklyn Nets. You know, two football, two basketball, two baseball, and three hockey counting the Islanders.
Yep,
Rangers and Devils. That's a little bit rough.
But there's an asterisk next to that one. Then none in the 1990s. You have to then go back to 89 San Francisco with the Oakland A's and the Niners.
That's what I was looking for.
And then the year before, 88 Dodgers and Lakers.
Yeah, when I was talking about the Bay Area, that's the one I was thinking of.
Yep.
I knew there was one.
That was 1989.
You know, modern times, if you will. So anyway, that's when Mike and Mike said this morning it's a very select club that Cleveland would join if they do. If they do finish this off and the Indians beat the Cubs, it is very select. I mean, you got to, in the modern era, going back to say, let's say 79, there's only what then? Four, five? Pittsburgh once, Pittsburgh twice, the Angels and Lakers we just talked about.
Yeah, 79, 86,
89,
88, 89, 2000 if you want to count the Devils, 02, 04, 09, so it's only eight. It's only happened eight times starting with 79.
That's a pretty amazing thing. So some records are going to be set and droughts are going to end one way or the other when this World Series is over. Joining us now to talk a little bit more about this, Bob Ibach, who is the former Cubs PR director, a guy who's been a part of baseball for over 40 years as a sports writer, broadcaster, baseball executive. And Bob has been on with us before. Every time there's something spectacular like this that goes on in the market of one of the teams that we cover, they do something terrific to help raise money for charity and also help fans commemorate the experience for a lifetime. Bob, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Nice to be with you. I'm doing great. And, people always, because I spent 10 years with the Cubs in their front office, they assume automatically that my heart is only with the Cubs. Well, Lou Boudreau was one of our great broadcasters when I was with the Cubs for many, many years. Actually, Lou also managed the Cubs for I think it was 30 days when they were part of the College of Coaches.
How back, about that?
Yeah, back in 1960 when Mr. Wrigley had that crazy idea of every 30 days putting a new coach in charge of the team. Lou took his shift, if you will. But Good Kid was a very good friend of mine. I always enjoyed him. I know he's part of the Indians lore from his days as a shortstop playing manager back in 1948. When they won the last time. And so I'm kind of torn in this whole thing, but I am so happy to be helping out the Boys and Girls Clubs locally there, because this is a great project. We just kicked it off the other day. And for the folks in your area, I'm going to give out a toll-free number and a website in just a second, give you a chance to grab a piece of paper and a pen, because this is really cool. Rawlings made only 5,000 of these three-ball sets. They come in a nice acrylic display case for just $79.95. And what you're going to be getting is a 1920 replica World Series baseball from when the Indians beat the Brooklyn Robins back in those days. They didn't even call them the Dodgers then. 1948, of course, when Lou's team went ahead and beat the Boston Braves in six games. And then, of course, this year, the 2016 World Series appearance, which, if they go on to win this thing against the Cubs, will also put world champions on that ball with a recap of all the games. So you get all three baseballs. These are Rawlings official baseballs. Come in a display case for just $79.95 to raise monies for the Boys and Girls Clubs there locally. And it comes with a numbered certificate of authenticity. So if you'd like to order these, you'll get them in about 6 weeks and plenty of time to use as a Christmas or holiday gift idea. But I do want to emphasize, only 5,000 of these sets will ever be made, and we're probably one-third of the way already there. So if you'd like to order these, there's two ways we set it up, real easy. Toll-free number is 1-800-345-2868. And again, that's 1-800-345-2868. Or just go right to the website, nicosports.com, nikcosports.com. And somebody told me today, another way to say that phone number is 1-800-345-BUNT. Like in bunting a baseball.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, somebody called me up and said, you have a baseball term on the end of that phone number?
That's pretty good. Not even intended, and that's the way it turns out. Maybe that's karma. That sounds like
maybe
a great
it's karma.
Bob,
yes.
As all of the commemorative things that you have done with proceeds going to very needy organizations and very great organizations, in this case, the local Boys and Girls Clubs. So let's give that number again, 800-345-BUNT or 2868, or you can order it at nikosports.com, nikcosports.com. Did I get it all right?
That's right. You got everything right. And this is, I had a chance to see a prototype of this yesterday at my office. And in fact, I'll be coming to Cleveland tomorrow. I'm going to be driving there with my son. Kevin is the pro scouting director with the Tampa Bay Rays. He got a hold of a couple World Series tickets. He says,
nice.
Hey, Dad, I'm taking my dad to the World Series. So how nice.
That is a very nice son indeed. You've obviously done some good things for that young man, because he's hooking up pops. Bob Ibach, a former PR director with the Cubs, with a great offer here to help raise money for the Boys and Girls Clubs. 1-800-345-2868. A three-ball set commemorating the 1920, 48, and 2016 World Series. Hopefully world champions in 2016 as well. Order as well at Nico Sports, NIKCOSports.com. Bob, thanks so much for the time. Enjoy the game tonight. And it looks like you're going to have a great time no matter who wins this with your history with both clubs and people with both clubs. So
This is good for baseball. I mean, these are two franchises that are just, you know, their fan bases are very, very loyal. And it's, you know, they've all been dry for a little while. One going back to 48 and the other one going back to 1908. And so somebody's got to come out with a big smile. But I think even if, just to go ahead and get to the World Series for either one of these franchises and their fan bases has got to be a very exciting thing. And I think America and television sets and radio programs across the country are just kind of just lapping this up. It's a great story.
No doubt about it, Bob. And we're going to enjoy it here in Northwest Ohio as they played over in Northeast Ohio and then to the west of us in Chicago. So we got it covered all the way around. Bob, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. Best of luck with the set and raising money for the Boys and Girls Clubs.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Really, have a great day. Okay. Talk to you. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much, Bob Ibach, joining us there. And speaking of, he's, again, former PR director with the Cubs. He spent 10 years with the Cubs. We want to go to Chicago now and join Al Yellen. Al is a writer who covers and reports on the Chicago Cubs for an SB Nation website, bleedcubbyblue.com. As always, during all of these playoff runs or series that we've had thus far, we like to talk to somebody from the opposing city, kind of get the lay of the land there and see how they feel about their matchup with the Cleveland Indians now. It will be the Cubs and the Indians starting game number one. So Al Yellen from bleedcubbyblue.com joining us as well. Hey, Al, how are you, sir?
I'm good this afternoon. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you, and I'm great. Everything that Bob Ibach just said is so true. It is great for baseball what we're seeing right now, either a 108-year drought or a 68-year drought, the two longest world championship droughts in Major League Baseball. One of them is going to end tonight, and that's a great thing for everybody.
Right. Well, of course, it doesn't end tonight. It ends, whichever team wins.
It was great
to hear from Bob. Bob's an old friend, and you know, I'm glad to hear that he's going to be getting to go to one of these games in Cleveland.
Yeah, and you know, it's weird because I said at the beginning of these playoffs on this program, not that you would know this, but Jim and I, you know, predicting all these things, I said if my Indians can't win it, I'm rooting for the Cubs. I'm like the rest of America. I want to see that, you know, that struggle and all of those tears and all of that heartache and generations of Cubs fans who have never seen a title. I want to see that end for them. But then, of course, here we come. You know, I'm a hometown Cleveland guy. And so now I'm like Jason Kipnis, the second baseman for the Indians, who's a former Cub fan, who was raised a Cub fan, who said, you know what, that curse can hold on for one more year as far as we're concerned.
Well, you know, Jason Kipnis, obviously, he's playing for his team. He's going out there to win, but you know, I know that I did read that he was tearing up a little when his childhood team won the pennant. And, you know, even that, you know, that drought is longer than the Indians World Series drought. So that in itself was something that was that was great to see end last weekend when the Cubs won the National League pennant.
Yeah, I
still can't believe I'm saying those words. The Cubs won the National League pennant.
45 years since they were able to do that. And, you know, what you said Jason was tearing up. You know, we all watched some of those images of especially the older fans, you know, grandpas, you know, and I don't want to say octogenarians, but just senior citizens, mostly the ones who have been maybe wondering, am I going to live and die without ever seeing my team, you know, win a championship, get to a World Series, let alone win one, and to see some of those older faces with tears on their cheeks. It was really a very special thing to see. And like I said, it's why I think 49 states out of 50 are going to be pulling for the Chicago Cubs in this series.
You know, that's how I feel about the friends that I've known, people that I've known, sat within the bleachers for years, many years ago, and some of them have come and gone. And I think of those people at this time, you know, those older friends who didn't make it, who passed on before they could see this, you know, they're always in my mind and my heart as this happens.
Yeah, and you know, again, being here in Ohio, and Jim and I, who set this up with you, are both native Clevelanders, so we were raised on Cleveland sports. We kind of felt the same way. There were people who, particularly when it comes to the Indians, but for some, just a championship at all, because this Cavaliers championship this past June, the first one in 52 years, there were a lot of people who felt like they were never going to see a championship in this town, you know, in their adult lifetimes. You know, some of them may have been very young kids in 64 when the Browns won the NFL championship, but they never thought it was going to happen. So I saw that emotion, and we lived it, and there were a lot of people who felt it and a lot of people who passed on before they got to see what just happened. And now, I mean, shockingly, they end 52 years of futility, and now they may have two championships in 1 year. It's one of those things you just cannot, you cannot write up in a Hollywood script. It just would be ridiculous.
And I know there's going to be a crazy scene down in downtown Cleveland tonight, because I know the Cavaliers have their season opener right next door to World Series Game 1. I mean, how crazy is that?
not just opening, but as you know, raising the banner to the
right.
Rafters,
so that,
ring ceremony,
yeah, what? That would have been a great event, even if there had been no World Series game next door. Now really all eyes of the country are on Cleveland.
And I'm assuming they're going to run that. They're going to carry that on the big board, on the big scoreboard there at Progressive Field as well prior to the game. That'll happen at 7 o'clock. First pitch is at 8. But there's going to be thousands and thousands of fans, I'm sure, in their seats in the ballpark, cheering on what's going on next door. At the Q Arena, which would be a huge home field advantage, an already excited crowd is just going to be going crazy as the Cavaliers celebrate.
Yeah, it won't be everybody, though, because I know there are a large number of Cub fans who managed to obtain tickets. I couldn't get any myself. It just didn't happen. But I know a lot of people that I know are heading east or have already headed east towards Cleveland for tonight's game. There will be a significant minority of Cubs fans at Progressive Field tonight.
Al Yellen is my guest from BleedCubbyBlue.com. Speaking of that home field advantage thing, I was talking about this yesterday. While I will certainly take my hometown team, being able to host games 1 and 2 and 6 and 7 if necessary, I'm not a fan of how it came about. To me, this All-Star game, the way they decide this, Al, the Cubs won 103 games. The Indians won 94 games. In my mind, the Cubs ought to be the home team. They had the better season.
That's no, I couldn't agree more with you.
I could give it back, but that's the way it ought to be.
Right. I mean, you obviously will take it, but you're right. It shouldn't be done this way. I understand the concept. They want to create more interest in the All-Star game. This isn't the way to do it. It becomes kind of an unfair thing. You know, the Cubs played so well all year. They had home field advantage through the National League playoffs, and now all of a sudden the team that won 9 fewer games is hosting game one. And, you know, in many ways, we all kind of feel that game one should be here at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, I really do, too. And, again, not just because it's Wrigley, it's just the way it ought to be. And, by the way, you know what else they ought to do? They ought to play one day game at Wrigley Field. That's the one thing that I really, really regret. You know, once they put those lights in, when was that?
Like 1988.
Once they put those lights in, we know that everything was changed forever. But it would be really, really great for nostalgic purposes, would it not, if they could play one of the games maybe over the weekend?
It sure would. You know, they could have maybe played a Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, you know, late enough in the day, certainly would have gotten the national attention anyway, being the Cubs,
I mean,
being Wrigley Field.
They don't want to fight with the NFL. They don't want to compete obviously. But
I get that. I kind of have that nostalgic bent with you. I love day baseball, and just one day game in the World Series, that certainly would have got everybody's attention because it's so different, because all the World Series games have been played at night now for decades. To have played one day game would have been exciting for people.
Now to the matter at hand, Al. All the niceties are gone. Now it's time to start talking about nuts and bolts here and finding a winner in this thing. The Indians are the underdogs. They were the underdogs against the Red Sox, and they were the underdogs, even though the Blue Jays were the wild card team, they were the underdog against Toronto. Everybody that I talked to from around the country said, how are the Indians without Carrasco and Salazar going to handle that powerful Blue Jays lineup? And all they did was everything they had to do. They gritted, they gutted, and they grinded their way to 7 wins in 8 games against two very, very good offensive teams. The Cubs are that as well. How do you see this thing shaking out, this group of overachieving kids in Cleveland and a couple of veterans hanging on with a ragtag pitching staff minus two of their top three starters? How do you see this thing shaking out?
You know, the Indians didn't hit very well against the Blue Jays either. They only scored 12 runs in 5 games, which is not a lot. They managed to neutralize the one thing Toronto does well, which is hit for power. Mm-hmm. And, they shut down pretty much the Blue Jays' home run bats, and that's really, really it for Toronto. If they can't hit for power, they're really not going to score many runs. The Cubs have a much more varied offense than the Blue Jays do, and I think that will be the thing that will help them get past the Indians pitching staff. What we in Chicago have been saying all week, and I would agree with this, is that the Cubs have to get to the Cleveland pitching staff early, try and get an early lead, because they don't want to go into that sixth inning and see Andrew Miller and the Indians bullpen when they're behind.
Yeah, I completely agree, and that's exactly why from my standpoint, I said just the opposite. The Indians need to get a lead and hand it off to that pen. Even if you can get through 5 with most of these starters, we don't know what you're going to get with Trevor Bauer and his finger. You don't know what you're going to get if they go with Josh Tomlin, and then who knows if Danny Salazar comes back and gets a start. It would only be a short start. I think they've already said that, given how long he's been laid off. You just got to get a lead to these guys and hand it to them even as early as 5. He's proven, has Terry Francona, he'll go to Andrew Miller in the 5th. He did it against the Red Sox to get a win in game 1, and then just use that multitude of unbelievably effective arms out of that pen. If they don't get that lead early, though, If the Cubbies do exactly what you just said and get to the starter early, then I think the Indians are going to be in a world of trouble.
Right. I mean, this is something that's kind of been a thing in this year's playoffs. We saw the Dodgers do this, too, against the Cubs, that they went to Kenley Jansen early. They went to their bullpen early to try and keep the Cubs down, and it obviously didn't work. You know, this pitching matchup that we're going to see in Game 1 is one that happened at Wrigley Field just last year. John Lester faced Corey Kluber. Both pitchers threw magnificent games. Neither was involved in the decision. Because runs were scored off both bullpens in the ninth inning. Chris Bryant hit a walk-off homer off Zach McAllister to win that game. But that's the kind of pitching I would expect tonight, especially since it's supposed to be a cool night in Cleveland. Definitely favorable for pitchers, so I would look for a low-scoring game tonight.
Yeah, I would too. We're talking to Al Yellen, who covers the Cubbies for BleedCubbyBlue.com. Going to be watching like we are game number one from Progressive Field. Jim Cushlin is here as well. Cush, you got a question?
And when I think of this pitching matchup today, Al, you know, as you just mentioned, a Lester, a Kluber, and thank you, by the way, for the trip down memory lane when those two did, in fact, play against each other, pitch against each other a couple years back. The one thing that gets me is something that came up in the Dodgers series, and it was in his last start, and the Dodgers, they were all dancing around, but they never even tried to really take the base. And I could promise you the Indians will. They're probably the best base running team, and not just steals, but in general in the American League. Now, of course, getting on base is going to be easier said than done, because John Lester has been outstanding in his career against the Indians. But as soon as some Indians get on base, especially if it's the Rajay Davises, even with the ankle, maybe the Jason Kipnises, they're going to be running, unlike the Dodgers in that NLCS game.
Well, you know, when I watched Kike Hernandez in particular start dancing around first base, I almost started laughing, because that's not the way to distract John Lester. He's going to look up over there and just pitch his game. But you're right about the Indians. They're a much better running team than the Dodgers were, and the Cubs did have a bit of trouble against the Milwaukee Brewers this year, who are the best running team in the National League. So, yes, the key is to keep guys like Davis and the other Indians who can run off base. I will say that David Ross will be catching Lester. He is very good at throwing out runners. He led the major leagues in pickoffs this year with 5 pickoffs. So that's something that the Indians will have to watch out for. If Davis or other runners take those big leads, David Ross might just pick them off.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's going to be a very interesting thing to see how aggressive they get on the base paths, assuming they do at least somewhat. And the one last thing, we'll go because we're out of time here, Al, but the Cubs, when they had their struggles in the series, the last series, it was against left-handers. Of course, they found a way to solve that against Clayton Kershaw on the clincher, but it was against left-handers. Rich Hill, Clayton Kershaw had given them problems earlier on. The Indians have an all-right-handed rotation. That's a big, big advantage, I think, for the Cubs.
Yeah, I believe it is. The Cubs will not have to deal with left-handed starters, and they've stacked the lineup tonight with as many left-handed hitters as they can get. They've got an interesting selection in right field. Instead of Jason Hayward, the normal right fielder, Chris Coughlin is going to start in right field. I guess Joe Maddon must think that Coughlin has a better chance to hit Kluber than Hayward will. Figure if the Cubs get a lead, then maybe Hayward comes in the late innings for defense. And let me just say one thing about the Cleveland Indians. I obviously have followed the history of baseball and understand the tribe's drought and all that, and the many years down years that they had. Have a great respect for the Cleveland Indians and what they've accomplished, and their manager and their entire roster and the fan base. This ought to make, you know, between the two fan bases and the two ball clubs, this really should make for a memorable World Series.
No question about it. And all I can say to you, my friend, is that we need to get the lead so that we can turn it over to. Bear with me. Don't let it become Miller time, Al. Don't let the Cubbies get to Miller time. Or
yeah, I can understand that. And don't let the Indians get far enough to get to Aroldis Chapman.
We'll take our chances let's just leave it at there. There's no song for Aroldis Chapman. Let's stick with Miller time. Hey, thanks very much, Al. We really appreciate your time. Al Yellen from BleedCubbyBlue.com. Great stuff. We appreciate it. All right, there you go. That's Al Yellen, and let's take our time out now. We got a top of the hour Sports Center coming our way. We're already late for that. We're going to shift gears and talk about the other big thing going on in the sports world right now, and that is the start of the NBA season tonight. Some NBA talk coming up after the top right here on The Ticket.
There's a red moon rising.
Curry helps out. Smith pass right through the hands of Curry. James, the two-handed slam.
On the Cuyahoga River.
James on the drive, fouled, layup, counted, and one.
Rolling in the Cleveland to the lake.
Five to shoot. Azealia again goes back up on him. James steps back for three. Puts it in! LeBron James from downtown!
There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
Irving drives on Green, gets inside, off balance, comes up short, gets his own rebound and puts it back. Perry Irving, the second effort.
There's an orange barge winding down the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
Irving drives, hop step inside, close it up, misses. Rebound taken by Iguodala. Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James!
Oh, my goodness.
Cleveland, city of light, city of
remaining.
And they're putting Curry in the pick and roll, trying to get him on Irving. Irving and Curry, one-on-one. Irving puts it up.
It's good! Kyrie Irving from downtown!
Irving now with 26 and back in Cleveland. These fans realize they're 10.6 seconds away now from a championship.
Cleveland, even now I can remember. Of the Cuyahoga River. Go smoking to my dreams.
Trying to stay with Curry. Catches. One dribble. Steps back. Puts up a three. Won't go. Rebound tip taken by Spates. Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Burn on, big river. Burn on.
I understood what the people of Northeast Ohio have been through the last 50-plus years. I kept it at bay. I never stressed the fact that I didn't feel the pressure, that none of those things, so it always kept me level-headed. But I understood what everyone in Northeast Ohio have been through the last 50-plus years, and I'm happy to be a part of history. I can't wait to get back home.
Now the Lord can make you tumble. The Lord can make you turn. The Lord can make you overflow. Lord can make you burn.
I just knew what we was capable of, even being down 3-1 versus the greatest regular season team ever. You know, 73-9, and everybody counted us out, and that's when we strive the most, when everybody count us out. And that's definitely when I strive the most, when everybody count me out.
Burn on, big river. Burn on.
I gave everything that I had. I poured my heart, my blood, my sweat, my tears to this game, and Against all odds, I don't know why we want to take the hardest road. I don't know why the man above gives me the hardest road, but it's nothing the man above don't put you in situations that you can't handle. And I just kept that same positive attitude, like, instead of saying, why me, they're saying, this is what he want me to do. And Cleveland, this is for you.
Burn on, big river. Burn on.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Very, very special things happening with our friends to the east of Toledo out in Cuyahoga County, where that river once burned, but now, of course, it just is a pristine, iconic landmark in what could soon be a city of champions. Already the city of the Cleveland Cavaliers, world champions in basketball, and maybe home to the world champions of baseball. Game number one tonight, they're having two simultaneous events going on, and joining us now from the Northeast Ohio Insiders.com website, run by our friend Matt Lodi, your regular guest on this program, is Matt Medley, co-editor of NEOSportsInsiders.com. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks for having me. You know, it feels like only yesterday LeBron was raising that trophy, and here we are again.
Yeah, it's so weird. I mean, that's the reason we played that again, just kind of remind everybody, while everybody is all, and rightfully so, anybody in Ohio that's a baseball fan that is not bitter and angry because if they're a Reds fan and they're not there, or if they're a Tigers fans and they're not there, anybody who's a baseball fan is rightfully giddy about the Indians. What's going on over at the Quicken Loans Arena right across that plaza out there in Cleveland is better and bigger because it's celebrating something that's been done rather than hoping something gets done, you know, tonight in Game 1 and throughout this series. The ring ceremony, the championship banner will be raised. Can you give us a sense? You're going to be in the building. Give us a sense of what the atmosphere is like out there.
Well, there's already people outside in the area between Progressive Field and Quicken Loans Arena. You know, the Indians don't start till 8. The Cavs don't start till 7. The ring ceremony's at 7. The game's at 7:30. But it's already a party atmosphere downtown. You know how Cleveland loves its sports teams, passionate fan base, and I'm sure it's just going to be an awesome moment. You know, I was at Game 6 was the last real game I saw in there because I've been to some preseason games, but I'm sure this atmosphere will compare to Game 6 when they raise that banner.
So did you draw the long straw or the short straw between you and Lodi? Because I know he's going to be over at Progressive Field watching Game 1. You're going to be there at Quicken Loans Arena watching the banner raising ceremony and the in Game 1 of the NBA season. Which did you prefer?
Well, honestly, the Cavs has been my beat for the past two seasons, so, you know, I was kind of expecting to be there, but it's really a no-lose situation. I mean, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I would love to be in either one of those places. I'm sure everybody within the sound of my voice, provided they are rooting for one of those teams, would agree. So let's talk real quick about, you know, the defending champions starting their season now at home, of course. Talk about the, you know, the expectations. I think most NBA analysts and prognosticators have said that we are in for the third fight of this trilogy. Kind of going back to Ollie Frazier, there will be a Cavaliers-Warriors rematch in the NBA Finals, or as I termed it, three-match, something I'm still going to go ahead and patent and copyright. But there's going to be a three-match between the Cavs and the Warriors, according to almost everybody. Are you in that group?
I mean, barring injury, I don't see how anything else could happen. The only way is a significant injury to a star player on either team, because they're far and away the most talented in each conference.
Is there anybody in either conference that you think is you, since you've been on this beat, so you watch it closely, is there anybody in either conference that you think that could deny us that three match between Cleveland and Golden State?
Well, what I will say is if anyone in the West is going to upset Golden State, I think this is the best chance because it's their first year together and you don't know how quick it'll take that chemistry to develop. You know, the Miami Heat, when they first formed their first year, they lost to the Dallas Mavericks, something no one really expected. So if there is a chance for a team like the Clippers or Spurs to upset Golden State, I think this is the year. But then again, you know, Durant and Curry are two of the top three players in the league. So just those two alone, let alone Klay Thompson is an amazing player. Draymond Green is a really good player, as much as Clevelanders don't like him. So it's really tough to see anybody coming out of the West other than Golden State.
I got to say, I agree with that, but yet there is part of me that wants to say that there is going to be kind of a Miami problem here, like you just described, but it's a little bit
right.
Different. Because when Miami brought LeBron James down there in 2010, Dwayne Wade was not the best player in the NBA. LeBron James was, and Dwayne Wade kind of said, yeah, let's do this, and I'll kind of defer. I'll be the clutch guy if that's what we need, but you can be the take-the-most-shots guy and be the stat stuffer guy, and that's fine. But when you got Golden State here, and this is where I think there's going to be an issue. I heard somebody mention this morning. Kevin Durant took the fifth-most shots in the NBA last year. Steph Curry took the second-most shots in the NBA last year. The guy that Durant is replacing, Harrison Barnes, took like the 95th most shots in the NBA last year. He took 9 shots a game, which left a whole bunch for Steph and Klay and Draymond and everybody who wants their touches. Kevin Durant comes in here and you replace the guy with the 90th most shots with the 5th most shots. Somebody's going to be losing some shots, and there is going to be, I think, you know, I don't want to say fighting over the ball, but they're going to have to find a way, and it may take some time before they figure out how to defer to one another for the betterment of the club.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think there will be growing pains, but you know as well as anybody, the NBA regular season is all about just getting to the playoffs. And if they're clicking by the playoffs, they're going to be a scary team for anybody. Now, you could be right. I mean, it doesn't come overnight. And that's another thing where if a key guy gets injured during the season, even if they come back later in the season, that chemistry wouldn't have had the time to develop. But it's almost like when you look at Team USA basketball in the summer, you know, they had the most talent by far, and there were some teams that gave them a good fight, but in the end, their talent just, you know, pushed them to the top. So it's almost that type of talented roster just with their starting five.
Yeah, that's very true, and I get that. I guess I could also look to not this past year, but the previous year, the first year of the Big Three in Cleveland when LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love came together for the first time. We saw what happened. It was something that didn't click in the first couple of months, and really, quite honestly, it wasn't clicking down to the end, even though the way it turned out is LeBron had to carry everything anyway because Love and Kyrie were out. But we know that happens, and that's happening with one of the most unselfish superstars the game has really ever seen. Everybody knows that LeBron James is perfectly happy to average 9 assists a game and not take 22 shots, 23 shots. And I don't know that I could say the same about Steph and Clay and Kevin Durant and Draymond Green.
Yeah, if there was any team close enough to them that I think could outweigh those issues, maybe the Clippers, because you have Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan have been together so long, so they have that continuity. Even the Spurs, who they're a great team, but
they hate the Warriors.
Oh yeah, they have that would be a great series. Amen. Yeah, that would be a great series. But even the Spurs, they're going to have to adjust with life with Pau Gasol coming in. So it's not like they're going to be clicking from day one either. And then the rest of the Western Conference, in my opinion, behind LA and San Antonio, really leaves a lot to be desired. So if the West was a little more stacked, it might be a better fight.
Who's the biggest threat, Matt Medley of NEOSportsInsider.com, in the East to the Cavaliers? And again, I don't think there's any question. I think the Cavaliers, barring injury to a bunch of people, I think the Cavaliers are far and away the, you know, head and shoulders above the rest. But who is the second best team in the Eastern Conference? Is it still Toronto, the team they beat in the conference finals?
If I'm going by just a pure talent standpoint, I would say the Boston Celtics, because Al Horford is an all-star caliber center. Isaiah Thomas is a rising star. Jay Crowder, he's kind of underrated, but he plays the position both ways on both ends of the floor, as well as most small forwards. And they have a well-coached team with Brad Stevens. They have a very deep bench, a very, very solid all-around team, well-balanced. So I think they have the most talent, but going back to the chemistry issue, you know, Toronto has Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, and Jonas Valanciunas, who have been together for so long. So as of right now, I think the Raptors are kind of that second best team. But as the season plays out, I would look for Boston and possibly even the Pacers, with some of the moves they've made, to move up into that conversation of making the Eastern Conference Finals. But like you said, you know, the Cavs are so talented, they're even more talented in the East than what the Warriors are in the West. So,
given the competition, I'd say that's true. Given the competition,
yeah.
I think if the Cavaliers were in the West, we got a bit of a fight there. You know, it's probably the Warriors and the Cavaliers kind of lumped in with a bunch of other very, very talented teams. But I think that's true in the East.
Yeah.
Being here in Northwest Ohio, we got a lot of Pistons fans, of course, who listen to us here in Toledo. Give us your assessment. Where do they fall in that pecking order? You didn't include them in the teams that you know, that you see as risers or competitive contenders when you talk about Boston and Indiana and Toronto. Where do you see the Pistons?
I think they're right behind that group of Boston, Indiana, Toronto. I think they're a 5 or 6 seed somewhere in that neighborhood. You know, Andre Drummond is great. He could go for 20 points, 20 rebounds any night.
And 20 missed rebounds.
Reggie Jackson. Well, yeah, that's true. That's the one downside.
We love him. But, and we love him. Pistons love him. But it's one of those things, you know.
Yeah, I think most people would live with that at the end of the day. But yeah, Reggie Jackson's a really good point guard. Having him miss, you know, a month to 6 weeks will be big. But I really like their backup point guard, Ish Smith, that they acquired, who I think is going to do a nice job to start out the season. And two players I really like in Detroit, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, a really good two-way player, and Tobias Harris, he averaged close to 17 points a game when he got traded from Orlando to Detroit once he arrived in Detroit. So they're a very encouraging team. You know, they have a lot going for them. The pieces are there to build around and make it a very competitive team. And I would say probably a 5 or 6 seed, and maybe they could get out of the first round of the playoffs if I'm just looking ahead to who they would match up against.
We're talking to Matt Medley with NEOSportsInsiders.com. He's going to be at Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland tonight for one of the most unique events that any city has really ever had in North America in sports, and that is the banner being raised celebrating one championship just 1 hour before the first pitch of the World Series as their counterparts, the Indians, fight for the next championship. What do you think is going to happen across the plaza from you? Game number one, Kluber against John Lester. Who wins game number one, and who wins that series on the other side?
Well, the Indians have been so great at home, and I think it's huge that they got the home field advantage, whether people love the All-Star rule or not. And go figure, Corey Kluber got the win in the All-Star game, so I mean, that, you know, you'll take that. But I mean, the Cubs have the talent to do it. I think it'll be an evenly matched series, honestly. You know, a lot depends on Trevor Bauer. Like, what, you don't know what to expect from him. Is Danny Salazar going to give you two or three solid innings out of the bullpen in one or two games? So it's tough to say, but you know, I'm born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio, Northeast Ohio, and I got to go with the Tribe, because at this point, how could you put anything past them after everything they've overcome? I mean, you throw everything in their way and they still manage to find a way to win.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. And I don't know how they found that way to win, how they managed that. I call them Triple G's, gritty gutty grinders. They just find a way to do whatever it takes to scratch out that night's win. They're not looking big picture. They're looking that night. We'll worry about tomorrow. And it's worked for Terry Francona, and it's worked for his guys. But you know what? That Cubs team is, I don't want to call them a murderer's row, but they are so unbelievably talented offensively. They don't just rely, we just had a guest from Chicago on, they don't just rely on the long ball, as he pointed out. They can find ways to score runs in many different ways. And that team is young, too. They are young, and they got guys who are going to be there for quite some time to come, trying to start a bit of a dynasty of their own. So it's going to be everything the Indians had against Boston and Toronto combined, I think, to get past this Cubs team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not going to be easy, but that's why, you know, the two best teams make the World Series. And in baseball, you know as well as anybody, it's a clean slate every series. Whoever gets hot in this series will end up winning. And I think that home field is going to end up playing a huge factor, honestly.
Yeah, I do too, which is one of those, you know, we talked about this yesterday on the show, and I just talked about it with our Chicago guest. We kind of all agree it's really, you know, while we won't give it back, when I say we, I'm talking about people who are rooting for the Indians, we won't give it back. But it's really not fair. You know, that's a 103-win team. That's a 103-win team that doesn't get first or home field advantage in the World Series because of the outcome of an exhibition game that their players didn't even decide. And neither did Indian. Well, even Corey Kluber got the win, but, you know, you understand the point. It's just kind of goofy the way baseball does that.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a few years people have realized this was kind of a dumb rule, but this really kind of cements it, you know.
Yeah, if you've got two clubs that are very close in terms of how they finish their seasons, you know, if the Cubs were a 95-win team and the Indians 94 or something like that, I don't think anybody's going to flip out over it. But when you're nine games better than your opponent in the World Championship Series, you kind of think, we got to be in our yard for games one and two and possibly game six and seven. And like I said, I'm not giving it back, but I do understand. I like fairness to be the rule, and I like I like accomplishment to trump novelties. And that's what they've done with the All-Star game. They made it a novelty.
Definitely.
Matt Medley, NEOSportsInsider.com, joining us. He is going to be inside Quicken Loans Arena out there in Cleveland tonight for the raising of the banner and the presentation of the rings. Last thing, LeBron James, does he get his fifth NBA title on his way to yet another finals appearance? Excuse me, fifth MVP award on his way to yet another NBA finals appearance? Or do you think his limited minutes as he pushes up now into his 30s, he's expected to get more time down on the bench. It's going to cut into some stats. Do you think he can win his fifth MVP this year?
I do not think he's going to win the MVP, because part of it is that, you know, Kyrie Irving is really rising into a true superstar. And when you have two guys like that, I mean, even Durant and Westbrook went through this where they're both so great that, you know, they kind of take away from each other's potential stat filling. But I don't think LeBron cares about MVP at this point, honestly. And I don't think he really cares that much about the regular season. He knows it's part of the process to get your team prepared for the real event, you know, the real stage.
Sure.
But I think at this point it's all about championships for LeBron, and he'll let Russell Westbrook or he'll let James Harden and those guys, you know, fight it out for the MVP. And he could put up, you know, 25-8-8, and it still wouldn't be enough to some of those MVP voters. But I think everyone knows who the best player on the planet is right now.
Yeah, I think that's one thing, especially that last year's playoffs and NBA Finals really, really proved. As Steph Curry, who was the best player in the regular season in the last 2 years, no question, no question. I mean, he did some incredible things. The numbers do not lie, and the win totals do not lie. It's not like he did those things in a vacuum. It was part of a great accomplishment, larger accomplishment, setting the NBA wins record. So he deserved all of that. But when it came time to, you know, to win the championship, it was pretty clear who was able to do that and carry his team. Matt Medley, NEOSportsInsiders.com. Have a good time tonight there at the Q. Once that game ends, you're going to be able to squeeze over on the other side and get into a media seat and watch the last couple innings?
Honestly, my goal is to not get stuck in the 5-hour traffic jam. So I'll be listening to Hammy on, Indians radio.
There you go. Yep. I can understand that completely. Hey, Matt, thanks for the time. We appreciate it. Keep up the great work on the website.
All right. Thanks.
You got it. Matt Medley, from Cleveland. So, I mean, look, it's a Cleveland-centric thing going on right now. Don't think that because Jim Cushlin and I are both native Clevelanders that we're trying to mess with your heads here. But, look, Mike and Mike, all of the guys on ESPN, this is what it is right now. The sports world right now is centered on that town because of what's going on tonight. It will be less so tomorrow for Game 2 because, you know, the whole Cavs novelty and the ring presentation. It'll just be World Series game number 2, and it'll be kind of normal, with the exception of, and that's the other part of this, Cushlin, you know, the other part of this thing that makes this so big is the nature of this World Series.
Yes.
This isn't just the Cleveland Indians against the, I don't know, Miami Marlins. This isn't the Indians against the Washington Nationals, in which case it would just have the World Series, you know, draw to it for what it is.
Sure.
But when it's the Cubs and the Indians, you add that to the mix here, and the whole country is just staring at what's going on down there in that, that acre or two square area of Cleveland, Ohio, where the Q and the Progressive Field reside next to one another.
Oh, absolutely, no question. And that's one of the other things, Bob, that's been going through my head these last couple of days, or at least since Saturday night when it became, I mean, I was thinking about it beforehand, but on Saturday night when the Cubs won and beat the Dodgers, therefore making this matchup official, I've been thinking a lot about whether it was the thought process going into that series or the reaction after said series was over, I've been trying to think of other World Series that may very well carry the magnitude of this one. And I'm coming up with things like 75. In fact, 1975 is actually a very interesting comparison. There's baseball people for years had talked about that 75 World Series. That's the one with Fisk off the pole, 7 games Reds sure. over the Red Sox. And a lot of baseball people have said for a long time that helped rejuvenate interest in the sport. This is exactly the kind of matchup, you know, that could help do that. So even before a pitch is thrown, in many ways, this is one of the most important in a way World Series that there's been in quite some time, if not ever. It's up there. And that's before we even throw a pitch.
Yeah, that's a great point. That is, you know, and that adds to the the attention that's being paid to this, and rightfully so, because this is one of those things that really is going to go down in history. Look, 40 years from now, if the Cubs win the World Series here, 40 years from now, especially if they never win another one, you're going to have kids who are watching today, and even dads when they're octogenarian grandpas talking about how they saw the year the Cubs won the World Series.
Yep.
You know, and it was the first time in 108 years. So this is a historic thing, and I think the same thing could be said 68 years in between championships for the Cleveland Indians.
And let's not mistake, it's not just the 68 years, because that's part of the reason a lot of people, even the national people I've already noticed, are trying to obligatory make sure that they mention that. But it's getting, you know, pushed aside a little because, oh, well, you Cleveland guys, you just won a title and broke your little jinx. No, the thing is, you have the Cubs win on one side, which you just said. The other side is an Indians win, and you have to write this in Sharpie. 2016 becomes the year of Cleveland, which is something I don't think you or I or any other Cleveland person could have imagined in our wildest dreams.
Especially because in that year, the Cleveland Browns will go 0-16. I'm just saying, you know. I'm not saying it, but I'm just saying it. Because I think that's
two out of three ain't bad. And a year plus ago, anyone in Cleveland would have taken one, let alone two out of three, though.
This has definitely not been the year of Bowling Green football. I think we can all agree with that. The Falcons limp into this weekend's play against Northern Illinois at 1-7, but that has not dampened the spirit of head coach Mike Jinks, who is trying to build a championship club there. He knows it's baby steps right now. They're taking steps, and they're learning a little bit with each defeat. defeat that they have suffered through this 1-7 start to the season. We're going to check in with Mike Jinks. He'll have a conversation with Jim Cushlin coming right up after we take this timeout. And by the way, before we do take that timeout, let me remind you one more time about the National College Football Championship Flyaway opportunity for you. Our grand prize in this contest, a trip to the title game in Tampa, trip for two, round trip airfare, 4-night hotel stay, 2 upper level tickets to the game, also a rental car with parking and a tour of the Yuengling Brewery in Tampa. It's a $5,000 prize package, courtesy of a lot of your friends right here, including Yuengling Lager, Yark Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, Country Hearth Fireplaces and Stoves, Allegiant Air at Toledo Express Airport, Total Image Limousine. And by the way, speaking of the limousine, if you don't win the grand prize, your second prize, the runner-up, gets a trip for two to Columbus for the Ohio State Michigan game with a pair of tickets and limo service to the game. And third place gets a prize package from Yuengling. If you'd like to qualify for that great contest, be the eighth caller right now to 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, and we'll qualify you for that. If you don't qualify on the air, try it online at 1065theticket.com. BG coach Mike Jinks joins us next right here on ESPN 1065 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here, hanging with you. We're going to switch gears from the World Series and all that good stuff. Talk some college football, Bowling Green style. Falcons fell back on Saturday at the Deutsch, 40-26 to Miami, 1-7 now on the year. Maction is their next game. Don't play this weekend. They don't play until next Tuesday the 1st, when they travel to Northern Illinois for the slate of weekday games and help us talk all things Bowling Green football. We welcome in the head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Doing all right, Jim. How are you?
Not too bad. 40-26. Let's start there. You guys fall back on Saturday, but quite frankly, you know, this was a nice competitive game. Despite the score, you guys were leading after one. You were within three after three. Talk to me about how your guys battled despite the loss in this one.
Well, it was a very competitive game. We had two evenly matched football teams. The young quarterback had three touchdowns heading into the fourth quarter, and we threw three straight interceptions. And a lot of that it goes on us as coaches, and particularly me as a play caller. You know, in that situation, that fourth quarter, you probably want to run the ball a little bit more and protect him a little bit. But, he's been in that moment. He showed up big for us the last few games in the fourth quarter, and, we just didn't get it done this time.
Yeah, 30 of 49, 389, three touchdowns, three picks, as you mentioned, from the freshman Morgan. And is it just as simply as those turnovers in the fourth quarter is what really put this final score the way it was?
Definitely, no doubt. It kind of got out of hand late there with two quick scores. We threw three straight picks on three straight possessions. Had the chance to take the lead on several occasions. And again, head coach, quarterback, we'll take it. That's part of the job, it's part of what we do. But, again, there were a lot of plays that were left out there by, both offensively and defensively. So, it's kind of been the theme of our year thus far. Just kind of beating ourselves and not taking advantage of the opportunities. And, we got to continue to work and find a way to get that done over the next 4 weeks.
Are these just some of the kind of things, because we've talked about this, Coach, over the course of the season so far. You guys are not just Morgan, but others in terms of bringing in some of the younger guys, getting them playing time. Are these just things like the three turnovers on the three interceptions? Is that just sometimes what you have to deal with when you're playing a lot of young guys like this?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. It's tough, but there are no excuses, We've got to get better. It doesn't matter who's playing. Somebody shot an interesting stat to me. I think we've started 24 kids for the first time this year, at least the country. That's just who we are right now. The thing that we've got to do is continue to work. We got to continue to develop the kids that are here right now. And then as coaches, we better be recruiting our tail off, because if you're playing that many young kids and the depth behind it, there's none. So, we got to develop the kids that we have right now. We've been in each and every game, and that's probably the frustrating thing. The most frustrating thing is that we've had our opportunities. We just got to figure out a way to get it done.
We're talking with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons here on the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here for some college football talk. And that's an interesting point, and you're correct on that. For the most part, you guys have been in most of these games. Obviously, that's going to be frustrating from your point of view as the coach. You've more or less told me so. How are the guys holding up? Because it does drop them to 1-7. Mentally, how are your players holding up through all this?
Well, it's been a roller coaster ride. It's been a rough season for them, especially that senior group who's accomplished so much. It's really tough, to be honest with you, Jim, after the ball game to address that group that's been so decorated throughout their career. It was an emotional time, players and coaches alike. But at the end of the day, we all walked out with our heads up, and the sun came up, and we'll come back, and we'll get after it again today.
And that's such a good point, Coach. You bring up that the seniors especially are some of the winningest group of Bowling Green Falcons there's ever been. I know there's got to be disappointment in them because, let's face the one fact, at 1-7 now, extremely unlikely if you were to win out, be 5-7, that you'd be getting invited to a bowl game. So that senior class, for example, they probably won't get another bowl game. So I know that probably disappoints them. But at the same time, there's still a lot of football left to be played. What is it from your point of view you want to present to the guys as goals for essentially the rest of this year?
Well, you know, it doesn't take much motivation. You got four nationally televised games, you know, and again, it's a very prideful group, and they'll be on the national stage, and there's not so much a chance of right or wrong, but just to finish things the right way. So we'll go out, we'll approach it as if we were 7-1. Our approach is not going to change. You know, we're not, it's not a deal to where, we're going to look to sit some more seniors and play some more young kids. And the fact on that is there's no more young kids left to play. Everybody that could be playing is playing. So, you know, we'll continue to build, we'll continue to develop. And like I said, we're on the national stage 4 weeks in a row, and it's not a better recruiting tool out there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Maction is one of the most interesting things, I think, college football in terms of this time of the year. If you count the NFL, you're now in the spot where you're going to have football 7 days a week. But it does present an interesting challenge from your point of view. I bet you're not used to playing games on Tuesdays or Wednesday. Next game for the Falcons coming up a week from today, next Tuesday, November 1st, on the road at Northern Illinois. Before we get into some nitty-gritty on all that, how do you guys from your standpoint, change some of the schedules? Did the guys get a couple days off? And then how do you recalibrate your schedule? Because if there's one thing we know about football, guys, there is a blatant routine that weekday games can kind of mess up.
No doubt. The biggest deal is treating this week as a bye week and kind of getting some guys healthy. So what you'll do is typically your Monday practices are more of a walkthrough and an introductory to the game plan. So we'll treat today and Wednesday as both Mondays, and you know we'll take a little bit off their legs. And then what you want to do is you'll start your that work week. You know, as coaches, like you said, coaches, football players, the days run together anyway. So Thursday will be our Monday, and we'll work backwards until we play Tuesday night. So.
And on that Tuesday night, Coach, I talk with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons here on the Extravaganza. That Tuesday night will feature a Northern Illinois squad. You're out in DeKalb. That's been one of the toughest places to play in the Mid-American Conference these last bunch of years. But as is always the case with Mid-American Conference programs, there's ups and there's downs. Northern Illinois is on a bit of a down stretch right now. They come in at 2-6, 2-2 in the league, especially in that tough West division. And despite records, they do have their history the last couple years behind him, so it is still going to be a tough game on the road for you.
Those guys have been in the last six championship games, and they just didn't suddenly forget how to coach football. So they've got a great coaching staff, and they're very talented. Again, they've been in a lot of those games as well. And that's kind of one of the things that you know, struck me. The parity of the league this year is unbelievable. You know, you got Eastern Michigan even going down there, and nobody gave them a chance against Western Michigan, and it was a dogfight. So it's great parity in the league, a lot of good teams, a lot of good coaches.
Yeah, and that's always the case with the Mid-American Conference. We're talking with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons here on the Extravaganza. Falcons bye week, if you will, this week. And then a week from today on Tuesday, November 1st, they'll head out to DeKalb, take on Northern Illinois. Again, that's as we just mentioned, that's the tough squad with a lot of history behind them in recent years. What are some of your game plans to try and stop them and get a win for the Falcons?
Well, we're going to have to be able to stop the run. And then, you know, offensively, you know, like I said, we've kind of developed our identity of who we are this year. And, you know, we've been able to move the ball. We don't turn it over. It'll be a fourth quarter ball game. And we'll be in it with a chance to win it, just like we have in the last four. So continue to improve, continue to get better. Like to see us run the ball a little bit better than we did, last week, especially, to protect, to James a little bit. You know, that 35 to 40 range is about where I want him in his attempts, and we don't need to be over 50, up and over 50. We'll look at that. We'll go back and see what Miami was able to do to slow us down and try to improve on it.
Head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks, joining us here on the Extravaganza. It's Northern Illinois on the road in DeKalb as Maction begins. That's next Tuesday, November 1st, for that game. We'll, of course, have it for you. 7 o'clock, the pregame time, over on our sister station, Talk Radio 100.7. Coach, always appreciate the time and the insight. And hopefully when we reconvene next week after that game, we're talking about a Bowling Green Falcons win.
Thank you so much, man.
That is head coach of the Falcons, Mike Jinks, joining us here on the Extravaganza. It's obviously been a tough road for the Falcons. We know how it started, giving up 70-something to Ohio State, 70-something a couple weeks later to Memphis, 1-7 overall. So obviously there won't be a MAC title game for the Falcons this year. There won't be a bowl game, even if they were to win out and be 5-7. So and that's why I asked him that earlier, because you got to wonder what some of the seniors, for example, are thinking, because this is a senior squad, at least the seniors right now for the Falcons. This is a team that's won MAC titles. They've been to a couple MAC title games. They've been playing solid football these last couple years. One of, if not the winningest senior classes, despite what's going on this season, in all of Falcons history. So it's obviously a little bit of a disappointment. But as we've been talking with Coach for a couple weeks now, they're bringing in a lot of young guys. That's why you see Morgan in there now, quarterback. And you're going to have those kind of games with freshmen in there. I speak of the three interceptions in the fourth quarter that really kind of gave Miami the space they needed, because it was a very competitive game all throughout. Falcons led after one, were within three after three, but you're going to have those occasionally, especially with younger players. But then again, that's a double-edged sword you use these kind of young players, because they are going to make some of those mistakes, but you know they need to be on the field in game action to learn from them. And I still think the Falcons down the road, by down the road I mean 2017, will probably be all the better for it. And it's nice to know that, hey, they might have something here in James Morgan at quarterback, with him only as a freshman. You know, you're going to get him for the next couple years with him having worked out these kinks that he's had this season at times, because again, you're going to have those with freshmen. But obviously it's a disappointing season overall for the Falcons and their fans, and it'll be a battle of disappointing teams coming up next Tuesday, November 1st, when the Falcons will travel to DeKalb, take on a Northern Illinois team that, as Coach pointed out, has been in the last six Mid-American Conference championship games. But like the Falcons, that's not going to be the case for Northern Illinois this year. They're 2-6 and already have two conference losses, but that's still a team like the Falcons that has a senior class that knows what it's like to win. So it should be a very interesting football game. And, you know, obviously, it is what it is for 2016 with the Bowling Green Falcons. Sometimes when talent cycles in and out, especially at this level, you're going to have seasons like this as you try to retool. There's really no, it's really, you know, not the case unless you're an Eastern Michigan type program that's been down for so very long. There's not really a rebuilding in this case. It's more of a retooling. And that's why it's been at least nice to see all these young guys, all these freshmen especially, get that kind of experience. They're going to be all the better for it. But obviously still a lot of football to go, and as Coach mentioned, four nationally televised games, despite the fact they're on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. That's obviously going to help things as well. Falcons taking on Northern Illinois next Tuesday. That's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out. We were talking some college football there just now with Mike Jinks, but most of our focus, of course, on the World Series and Game 1 tonight from Cleveland Indians Cubs. We'll join for the first pitch at 8 o'clock right after Bill Clark in the high school football form. That comes out your way 7-8. We're working into week 10. This is it, regular season-wise, so by this time next week, we'll also know who's playing who come the high school football playoffs. Bill's got the computer, latest updated computer rankings that he'll pass along your way on the form as well. So that's high school football form, Bill Clark and the crew from Shorty's. That's coming up 7-8, followed by Game 1 of the World Series. It's going to be interesting. You guys all know what I'll be doing there for at about 8 o'clock, and we'll talk about it all tomorrow. Enjoy the game tonight. World Series recap and more tomorrow. Drive Time, Mike Miller is next, though. Stick around for that.